Indie Media is DIY News. It is about people reporting their own news directly, without the need for reporters, bypassing the corporate media. There are now almost 100 Indie Media websites or IMCs worldwide, providing grassroots reports of struggles, campaigns, and protests. The project started 3 years ago, covering the massive Seattle protests that shut down the World Trade Organization summit. Uncensored and unsponsored, indie media sites can be updated literally anytime, anywhere, and by anyone. The open-to-all nature of these sites means that you can publish your own reports about your own issues and at the same time connect to a global network of grassroots news. What you are about to hear are some highlights from those global websites and the UK's very own indie media site. For more information or to get the news direct from the streets, check out www.indiemedia.org.uk.
Hello.
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 Hi, we're back just before Evian. So everyone going to Evian, we hope you have a good time. For those who don't know what Evian is the G8 summit, but people out there have organised an alternative summit where they're trying to speak out against what the G8 might decide. Coming up in the show today, we have lots of different things. We have poets John Hegley and Victor Lembrisco, who are doing a benefit concert for CARE. And we have two people who come from, help me someone.
Positive Worlds.
Positive Worlds, yay! two people from Positive Worlds who have put together this amazing concert to fundraise for CARE. And we have all our usual news, views, and whatever else we have
current
in our show.
Affairs.
Yeah. We've screwed up the schedule this week, so there's no schedule.
We just said
no schedule. So relax and enjoy. We don't know where we're going to end up. Right, some news.
Privacy International have launched a Know Your Data campaign in the UK to enable people to write to their telecommunications providers, asking for details of the records held on them. The campaign provides three model letters to be sent to providers. A Privacy International spokesperson said, "Many of the companies that supply Britain's communication services, the landline services, cable companies, mobile operators and internet service providers, are accumulating a vast amount of personal information about their customers. This communications data, which is currently stored for up to 7 years, may relate to all the calls that you have made and that you have received, who you are in contact with, the geographic location of your mobile calls, the emails you have sent and which you have received, the websites you have visited, the television programs you have watched, personal financial data and other personal information about you and your family. Combined, this extraordinary array of data creates a comprehensive dossier on the contacts, friendships, interests, transactions, movements and personal information about almost everyone in the UK. Communications providers do not need to retain all this information, but many of them are doing so as a result of negotiations with government."
BT, to give just one example, has fully automated its service to the government to the point where any information on any BT customer going back 7 years can be obtained by any authorised government agency merely by sending an email. Telecom also keeps its data for up to 7 years. Details of hundreds of thousands of consumers involving millions of communications are surrendered each year by communication providers. The Home Office is now consulting over these issues before taking further action, but the two consultation documents it has published indicate that the current surveillance regime is likely to be made universal. Precise information about the existence or the nature of such data is not made known to the public. If you exercise your legal rights to ask your communications provider for a copy of the information they hold on you, they will invariably withhold some of the data, stall the request, or lie outright about the information they are retaining. Thus, Privacy International has created a campaign to help UK consumers retrieve the information that is held about them. They hope that in so doing, everyone can learn a great deal more about this covert activity. It is also likely that the exercise of people's data protection rights will send a clear signal to communications providers and to government that people have a high regard for their right to privacy. For more information and advice on how to go about obtaining your records, check out privacyinternational.org. And next, coming up...
The American Civil Liberties Union... ACLU has just released a report on the suppression of dissent in post 9/11 American law enforcement officials across the Americas. Sorry, this is.
Go on, you can.
Go on, two, a three.
American law enforcement officials across the America have interrogated and detained, prosecuted hundreds of people for exercising their First Amendment freedoms of speech and assembly. According to a new report by the American Civil Liberties Union on the suppression of dissent since terrorist attacks of 9/11, this report clearly illustrates how dangerous it has become since the terrorist attacks of September the 11th. To criticise the President of the United States or his policies, said Anthony D. Romero, Executive Director of the ACLU. Government officials and political leaders must not be allowed to chill the free and robust debate that has made the American way of life the envy of nations and its constitution a beacon to the world.
Yeah, right.
Freedom under fire, dissident in post 9/11 America. Describes how some government officials, including local police, have gone to extraordinary lengths to squelch dissident wherever it has sprung up. Drawing on a breathtaking array of tactics, from censorship and surveillance to detention, denial of due process and excessive force, the 18-page report finds that dissident since 9/11 has taken three principal forms: mass protests and rallies, messages on signs or clothing, and other acts of defiance by communities and individuals. These have ranged from silent vigils in parks to the passage of resolutions in more than 100 communities across the country protesting federal measures that violate civil liberties.
Right. Police have beaten and maced protesters in Missouri, charged on horseback into crowds of demonstrators in New York, fired on demonstrators in California and other cities, and helped FBI agents to spy on professors and students at the University of Massachusetts. The ACLU report said some of the most stunning abuses, such as the compilation of political profiles of peaceful protesters by police in New York, did not come to light until they were exposed and challenged by ACLU. The ACLU report also makes it clear that our generation is not the first to face such challenges, with historical comparisons to government's suppression of dissent from 1920 through to the Vietnam era. Now, depleted uranium. Tomorrow is the second International Day of Action Against Depleted Uranium, or DU as it is otherwise known. DU is a radioactive byproduct of the nuclear industry that is used in armor-piercing shells and bunker-buster bombs. When a DU weapon hits its target, it burns on impact and creates an extremely fine dust that can be spread by the wind, inhaled, and absorbed into the human body. In the last Gulf War, the Pentagon admitted dropping 320 tons of the stuff, resulting in increased cancers and birth defects among the Iraqi people. Over 90,000 US troops who served in the Gulf have also reported medical problems. Symptoms include lung, liver and kidney dysfunction, memory loss, headaches, fever, low blood pressure and birth defects among newborn children. Recently, in the Second Gulf War, an unnamed US colonel has admitted that 500 tons of depleted uranium was dropped on Iraq. Other estimates up to 2,000 tons. They did nothing to limit DU use in cities. With these health effects, it's hardly surprising that the United Nations has passed two resolutions, which include depleted uranium weapons among weapons of mass or indiscriminate destruction. Not only that, but it seems that the US military don't care that they are leaving a toxic legacy in Iraq and don't care about the health of their own troops. In an interview with an Al Jazeera television, Professor Rock, a former chief of depleted uranium project at the Pentagon, said he was told to lie about the effects of DU. Even though we know there are health and environmental effects, you should make sure that we can always use uranium munitions in combat because they are so effective, and therefore lie about the health and environmental effects of the use of uranium munitions in combat. Campaign Against Depleted Uranium, www.cadu.org.uk. Okay, and we're now going over to a track by Johnny Cash in the Philippines.
Moving around the world in our view of global politics, let's stop at the Philippine Islands where Johnny Cash is cutting his new live album. Marcos was a sick old man. He could hardly make it to the can. For a lifetime, the power's his. A little old fellow who could hardly piss. USA wants to save the Navy bases, 'cause it costs too much to fix our ships. In other places, it's cheap, cheap, cheap Filipino labor. Now Marcos' wife, what a big bitch. For his death, she had the itch. Then will they still make Levi jeans and give blowjobs to Marines? CIA itching for a battle. They could shake things up like a baby with a rattle. But it's cheap, cheap, cheap Filipino labor. Corazon Aquino, what a pretty little thing. But it was George Bush that pulled her strings. He had her walking on a tightrope wire. Soon she falls into a ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, down, down. The flames keep going higher. And it burns, burns, burns the ring of fire. Now they take a $20 bill and fold it, and they say, what does it mean? I think it means the USA is back in the Philippines. They tell you that it's just a train admission. I wish to hell they'd go to somewhere else to do their pissing. I fell into a burning ring of fire. Well, we go everywhere, and the body count gets higher. It's cheap, cheap, cheap Filipino labor. It's cheap, cheap, cheap Filipino labor. Thank you.
You're listening to Indie Media Radio London. Don't hate the media, be the media.
And now we have a short interview with a couple of people, Laura and Ruth from Positive World, who are engaged in fundraising via performances. Can you tell us a little about it?
Hi, yes. We are basically putting on a night soon, on the 9th of June, for CARE International, a humanitarian organisation involved in relief work in Iraq, very majorly at the moment. And our reasons for that, Ruth can explain as well, what we're doing.
As everyone knows, in the lead up to the war in Iraq, there are a lot of passionate responses all over the world, really. And we really thought we wanted to do something constructive in response to it, rather than simply assert that war is wrong. Obviously, the humanitarian issue is a very, very important issue that needs
absolutely
to be addressed.
I get overshadowed by all the to-ing and fro-ing and polarised viewpoints and stuff, and really we thought creativity, a bit of enthusiasm, performance, and all that sort of...
constructive celebration.
Absolutely, constructive use of talent.
Happy. What's happening on June the 8th?
June the 9th. It's Monday night at the pool in near Liverpool Street. We've got John Hegley, really funny man, sound of paint drying guy, Simon Munnery, Hills Barker, a whole bunch of fantastic comedians and poets and performers all ready and willing to do their bits. And also DJs doing some good old house music, some drum and bass, all sorts of things going on through the night starting at 8.
8 o'clock till late?
8 till 12-ish, depends, because it's a Monday night. We're not going to have anyone there too late.
Right, OK. Thank you very much.
Coming up at the end of the show, we will have some poetry from John Hegley and Vic Lambrisco, who are going to be taking part in that night, and they gave us a free sample of what they're going to do.
You're listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance FM 104.4. Your radical radio.
Hello, we've got on the phone now, hopefully, because we've had a few technical problems, a man called Dan McLean, who works for Care International. We just wondered, Dan, what exactly has Care been doing?
Hi, I am on the phone, I promise you.
Yay!
Well, Care International is really drawing on 14 years of experience in Iraq. Care worked there throughout the last 12 years of sanctions. And, of course, the war has deepened that crisis dramatically, really, with many hospitals lacking basic supplies and water and sanitation very badly affected in the country. So our main efforts at the moment are to keep constructively working every day, moving ahead with assessments of water and sewage facilities in and around Baghdad, distributing supplies to healthcare facilities, and actually not least engaging with and listening to people, Iraqis, you know, the occupying powers and other humanitarian organizations. It's somewhat of an unstable situation at the moment, as you've probably heard about, with regards to security in the country, and that has had an impact on our work there.
How has it impacted on your work, and how are you solving those problems?
Well, I think one of the great strengths of Care is that all our staff in Iraq are Iraqi, and that enables us to engage with people on that level. And it has been a problem in terms of staff safety, and at the moment staff are not working at more than a couple of hours outside of Baghdad so that they can get back into Baghdad at night. But it's one of those, you know, it's one of those problems that I guess Care has been faced with before and is used to dealing with it. We're careful, but we're being careful to engage with the community in the right way as well.
Do you think the project is going to grow now that the war is over? Do you foresee a lot more support for the Care project now that sanctions are being lifted?
Well, there already has been considerably more support. I mean, we received an enormous amount of support over the 12 years we were there before the last war. But we are already, what we're doing now is getting basic services up and running, and then we can look at longer-term development work, and support from that will be coming from the normal sources, the British public, events like the one you've just been talking about, and governments.
Well, thank you very much. Good luck with future fundraising, and
You're welcome.
Hope everyone listening checks out Care. Do you have a website that you'd like to promote?
Yes, it would be great, actually. There's a very interesting Baghdad diary on there that we update every day with news from the field, and people can find that at www.care.org. It's care.org, and that will take them through to the right site.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Bye now.
Yeah. I think that was nice day.
You're listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance FM 104.4. Bypassing the corporate media machine.
Hello, and now some news from Congo and Rwanda. Yesterday, Rwanda voted in support of the constitution proposed by Mr. Kagame and his Rwandan Patriotic Front. In some circles, the talk is of peace and national renewal. In others, rumours of increased repression and state control, cloaked in the rhetoric of national unity. Opposing parties were, in the frenetic run-up to this election, accused of factionalism detrimental to the national interest. Opposition leaders have disappeared. Human Rights Watch has expressed serious concern as to Mr. Kagame's motivation. The constitution, they feel, will merely prolong RPF control. The election has also a symbolic function, marking the end of the post-genocide transition period. It is worth noting that Rwanda, like Uganda and Zimbabwe, is ruled by an astute but highly corrupt elite. They were aware that international tolerance of their troops in the neighbouring territory of Congo or Zaire was finite. Their response, to dress their soldiers as civilians. Rwanda even gave their troops new identities as Congolese Hutus. Few were sent home. There was no real disarmament. They did not abandon what they had plundered of the Democratic Republic of Congo's natural resources. They stationed their troops around the mines. They privatised state industries by setting up supposedly joint ventures, which merely served to ensure their own economic control of the region and, in the case of the Ugandan interference in the Ituri region, personal financial gain. They also continue to arm all sides. The DRC government is not innocent in all this. No one is innocent here, where in some regions, according to UN sources, child soldiers account for 50% of total armed forces. And in Bunia, villages burn. Repeated calls for UN intervention have yielded little response. These massacres are carried out by members of various tribes, but are not tribal conflicts. They are directly funded by the DRC neighbours and even by the DRC government itself. Their interest roused by DRC's mineral wealth, their alibi its vast size and disparate nature with over 200 spoken distinct dialects. Their main interests are in coltan, diamonds, gold, copper, coffee, cobalt and timber. The region is just as lucrative for the arms trade, as Victor Boot would testify. Alongside the Belgian, US, Israeli, South African, Canadian, German, Dutch and Zimbabwean companies involved in this murky business of mineral trade that more closely resembles the asset stripping of a nation than trade, 12 UK companies stand accused of breaking OECD guidelines for multinational enterprises in their Congolese dealings. And the villages burn. And the pygmies who have inhabited these regions since the late Paleolithic see their ancient land destroyed. The UN report the situation in Ituri as extremely volatile and foresee renewed violence in Bunia, where hospitals have been looted and vaccines destroyed. 50,000 fleeing civilians from Bunia have arrived in Eringeti. Millions have already been internally displaced in these waves of conflict. There have been peace talks, peacekeepers, peace agreements, pacification committees, but those with guns have too much to lose and trace their support back to such august origins that any real peace agreement is unlikely. As we watch this conflict continue, we would do well to consider that for decades, traditional tribal life has been impossible. Simply surviving has been near impossible. The natural environment has been pillaged beyond repair by illegal logging and mining, and the mountain gorilla, none of which are in captivity, is on the brink of extinction. The direct cause of these events might seem to us very distant, but the minerals are sold, mobile phone companies buy coltan, and end-user countries are a lot closer to home, with France, US, Belgium, Germany, and the UK among them.
Okay, and now we're going over to next story.
Next story is, in the past 6 weeks, 14 construction workers have been killed at work, the highest figure in the UK for over 10 years. Despite a promise by New Labour in their 1997 manifesto that corporate killing would become a criminal offence, companies are still being allowed to get away with murder, literally. This week, the government announced that it was finally going to introduce corporate manslaughter laws sometime soonish. And surprise, surprise, individual company directors will not be able to be prosecuted. For more on this, check out the Centre for Corporate Accountability at corporateaccountability.org.
A protest camp has been set up in one of the most beautiful forests of Belgium to protect it from turning into an ecological nightmare. D'Oppe, L'Oppe is a small village about 40 kilometres south of Ghent on the border of Flanders. Its forests provide a habitat for various rare and endangered species of animals, and it borders on the Brakebos Nature Reserve, which is highly protected for its natural and biological value. Unfortunately for the ecosystem of this area, the vast majority is owned by a local businessman who has been turning what were once the highest hills in the area into a landfill site and a sand quarry. When he wanted to cut down 30% of the trees that were left to increase the size of the quarry, the locals decided enough was enough. They demanded the landfill site be closed, that quarrying be stopped, that the illegally built road to the site be removed, and that every forest in D'Oppe becomes officially protected and made publicly owned. On the 27th of April, the camp was set up with tree houses going up and people arriving daily. For more information, check out www.foert.org. And now a story posted to IMC Reports from Franny Armstrong, the director of the award-winning documentary Drowned Out. Hi to all. This is the latest news just in from Gujarat and doesn't look good for Luh, Hariya and Bolgi and potentially tens of thousands of tribal villagers. On May the 14th, 2003, the Gujarati government got the much-awaited nod from the Narmada Control Authority, NCA, to raise the height of the Sarda Sarova Dam on the Narmada River to 100 metres from the existing 95 metres. The decision permitting the 5 metres increase threatens tens of thousands of people with submergence in the monsoon beginning in June and is in violation of Indian Supreme Court orders. Medha Pakta, the Narmada Bacheo Andolian MBA leader, lashed out against the decision, saying it spelt disaster, destruction and human tragedy for thousands of tribals and villagers in Madhya Pradesh and Maharashtra, who would face temporary and permanent submergence this monsoon. Official sources said the construction work to raise the dam height is underway and will take 45 days to increase it by 5 metres. Okay, and now we're going over to talk about the Evian Summit. Right now on the phone, though, we have from Venus. She's actually in Evian already, running around. Are you there, Venus?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hi. How are you? What's going on?
I'm in the Annemasse site, which is inside the French border. The weather is amazing. Anyone planning on having a summer holiday anywhere, I advise them to come here. But the camp's not just here. I mean, there are two camps here. One is called the Intergalactic Village,
okay.
And one's called Varg, and they're right next to each other in a really beautiful place surrounded by trees and mountains.
And what's going on in the camps? What's happening?
Well, they're very well organised here. They have lots of marquees up with different things going on inside. Just in front of me on the edge of the forest, there's a samba band practicing. They're getting ready and showing people who have never done it before how to play samba.
And what sort of discussions are going ahead?
Discussions that are going on are basically, at the moment, it's just really stuff about, you know, feeding people, basics. You know, inside the camps there are different subdivisions which are based around the kitchens so that people can eat. And there's a central... a central meeting in the morning, and then people feed back the information to the different, almost like different villages inside the villages. The discussions are going on about basically how people are going to, what sort of actions people are thinking of doing, and how is it going to get there. But Annemasse is not the only place that there is camps. There are camps inside Geneva. There's a squatted park there, and they're showing films and mobilising things and having action meetings as well, and obviously food.
How have the police been? How has security been?
Well, the security seems to be most hot around inside Switzerland, in a place called Lausanne.
Okay.
And there are police helicopters, army and police parading the place the whole time, and it's very, very hot there. Not here. Here is fine. We actually even got directions from the police about actually how to find the camp. It's most edgy over there in Switzerland, in Lausanne.
And what about are people being controlled and stopped in Lausanne?
Yeah, the toll roads have got police on them, and you can be sure that the police presence is going to be upped. People are being stopped, asked for their identification and their mobile phones. Their incoming and outgoing call registers are being monitored, where they're taken. They take away their mobile phones and get their telephone numbers of them. So if you want to be aware of that, anyone travelling who wants to keep numbers private or anything like that, then it's good to be aware of that.
Okay.
But yeah, you will need identification. You're going through these places, and I think more and more police will be heading here this way, because there are it's getting tighter and tighter, that's for sure.
Okay, well that's
it's only Tuesday now, and the action start on Sunday.
Okay, well we're gonna finish up now. Good luck. We'll hopefully all meet up, and there'll be more news on the Evian Summit after this next track.
Yeah, bring sun cream.
As you've just heard, some of the gossip from Evian. and update you on what's happening. This coming weekend, the summit returns to Europe after last year's retreat to the mountains of Canada, which followed the mass protests in Genoa, Italy in 2001. This year's location is Evian, a French town at the Lake Leman near Geneva at the Swiss border. Activists and NGOs have called for a week of counter-conferences, actions and protests. The global movement will confront the G8's set agenda with their own comments and viewpoints. Several IMCs, including Switzerland and Paris, will provide grassroots coverage of the summit. One convergence of independent media will be Lausanne in Geneva. Reports
where Venus just was.
Reports about events, protests and actions will be streamed, and hopefully we'll have a link on the front page of the UK Indie Media website. So if you have Winamp or something like that, you can listen in. The official G8 agenda, the official G8 website, announces four major themes. Under the label Solidarity, the summit will discuss, quote, access to water for all, unquote. The summit calls governments and businesses to display a, quote, spirit of responsibility, unquote. Third point is security in order to strengthen the fight against terrorism. Finally, the dialogue with civil society should strengthen democracy. Security and responsibility, look at the various oppositional websites, reveals a different image. An international gang of terrorists known as the G8 plan to meet in the town of Evian. Some of the leaders of this gang are responsible for crimes against humanity, including the assassination of several thousand people every year in Colombia, the deaths of hundreds of thousands of children in Iraq, indiscriminate bombing and nuclear pollution in Afghanistan, and an ongoing genocide in Chechnya.
In fact, an Amnesty report shows how military and security technology from the world's most powerful nations continues to make its way past inadequate controls into the hands of abusive regimes.
People's Global Action, or PGA, are challenging the G8's approach to achieve access to water for all. Their target is the bottled water of brands like Evian. Quote, groundwater is being depleted at incredible rates to fill the millions of plastic bottles and cans with which we quench our thirst, leaving behind a massive mountain of rubbish. The water business is greater in turnover than oil. Brands such as Evian or Perrier, both owned by Nestlé, are the most prominent high-value sows, the diamonds in Nestlé's portfolio in a global water market. Unquote. PGA proposes direct actions at every supermarket by distributing Evian bottles all over. Another water-related issue are the highly risky dam projects, such as the Sardar Sarovar Dam, which we mentioned earlier, in India, and the Itoiz Dam in the Basque Country. Okay.
Now, dialogue and democracy. In contrast to the official claim for dialogue with civil society, Evian will be sealed off by French, German and Swiss police. The authorities will reserve one lane of Lausanne-Geneva turnpike for transport and the Geneva airport and hotels. Also, all navigation on the lake will be outlawed with the exception of ferries for delegates. An activist website comes to the conclusion that, quote, summits intended as ritual shows of their supremacy now reveal the universal unpopularity of the regime and its fundamental basis, force and violence, unquote. And for tactics, instead of forcing their lines around the red zone as in Genoa, activists propose to declare an exclusion zone of their own. Creative actions in Geneva, Lausanne and Evian, as well as along the connecting streets, will claim the right to use public space despite the presence of the G8 summit. The general tone of G8 demos will be determined but humorous, musical and open. A strong pink and silver contingent will provide, take care of rhythms and colours. The local organisers see the G8 as an occasion to widen the movement and advocate comprehension of the issues. They don't want to appear as a foreign invasion.
Several anti-capitalist villages in Lausanne, Geneva and Annemasse will host activists. This approach can strengthen links between large mobilizations against global governance and local organizing. Based on previous experiences like the Strasbourg No Border Camp last year, they will encourage alternative forms of social organization and a place for debates on the largest perspectives of the movement. Decentralization and mobility will be the watchwords of the week of resistance. Activists are invited to come on buses, cars or even bicycles rather than trains.
What about skateboards?
Cool.
Yeah. Go on skateboards as well if you can.
And online skates.
Old-fashioned skates.
Roundup of demos. Tomorrow, the demonstrations start around the hotels in Swiss Lausanne to say not welcome to the G8 participants. A demo at the Mont Blanc tunnel will demand liberty of movement. In Annemasse, the activist villagers will hold a festive, outreaching demo to thank the hosting inhabitants and reclaim public space. On Friday, May the 30th, No Border activists will embark on an instructive tour of Geneva's international institutions under the slogan Wipe Out IOM, WTO and WIPO, starting at 11 o'clock, railway station in Geneva. The organisers are making a strong point of having a peaceful and colourful demonstration. More info on www.noborder.org. On Thursday evening, before the demonstration, a public debate will take place in Lausanne, Place de Volontaires, Geneva. Affiliates of the No Border Network will talk about the global migration regime and demand for freedom of communication.
And now a bit more about the No Border demo. IOM, WTO and WIPO symbolise the three central pillars of global governance. The three combined demonstrations in front of their respective headquarters will demand free movement, free communication and reject free trade as a solution to poverty and unemployment. The International Organization for Migration, IOM, an intergovernmental institution, claims leadership in the so-called global migration management. It combines programs of deportation and internment of migrants, the destruction of flight routes and recruitment projects for cheap labor. The World Trade Organization, WTO, enforces the free trade ideology. The demo here aims at taking back control of the means of production from the hands of both transnational and national capital in order to create free, sustainable and community-controlled livelihoods with equal rights and opportunities for women and men based on solidarity and people's needs and not on exploitation and greed. The World Intellectual Property Organization, WIPO, helps companies to exercise political control. Capital is being liberated by restricting individual and collective freedom and rights, even the right to life itself. Saturday night has the slogan, Fires on the Lake. About 50 huge fires will be lit in localities all around the lake encircling the G8. On Sunday, the opening day of the summit, a mass demo will take off between French en masse and Swiss Geneva between 9 and 10 a.m. The demo may symbolically open a frontier while closing the access of Evian to the official delegates.
Pink and Silver are calling for demos with a bit of poetry. To all neighbourhood troublemakers and fairies in the flowers, to every reclaimer of streets, counter of heartbeats and keeper of secrets, to petty thieves who are proud of it, to hardcore vegans who are sick of it, to the lover who can't get it up without a day of war behind him, to the warrior who can keep her cool, tasting the night of love ahead, to anarchists not black, socialists not red, and ecologists not green. You will always know Pink and Silver when you see it, because it is so... So, Pink and Silver. And we're going to say goodbye now. Wish everyone luck that's going to Evian.
Yeah, enjoy.
Yeah. And we're going to play out with some of John Hegley's poetry and Vic Lambrisco's poetry.
Should be good.
And next week it will be Andrew and Sian in charge of the show. So
look forward to it.
Look forward to that. Adios. Bella ciao.
See you next week.
Farewell.
I'm here with John Hegley.
Hegley, we're in the South Bank. I've just been up to the Poetry Library on the fifth floor, which I recommend. You can join and take the books out for free, just like any library. I've just got this book out, which was recommended to me by the poet Ivor Cutler, the Scots poet, 80 years of age. And the poem is called Responsibility. It is the responsibility of society to let the poet be a poet. It is the responsibility of the poet to be a woman. It is the responsibility of the poet to stand on street corners giving out poems and beautifully written leaflets, also leaflets they can hardly bear to look at because of the screaming rhetoric. It is the responsibility of the poet to be lazy and to hang out and prophesy. It is the responsibility of the poet not to pay war taxes. It is the responsibility of the poet to go in and out of ivory towers and two-room apartments on Avenue C and buckwheat fields and army camps. It is the responsibility of the male poet to be a woman. It is the responsibility of the female poet to be a woman. It is the poet's responsibility to speak truth to power, as the Quakers say. It is the poet's responsibility to learn the truth from the powerless. It is the responsibility of the poet to say many times there is no freedom without justice, and this means economic justice and love justice. It is the responsibility of the poet to sing this in all the original and traditional tunes of singing and telling poems. It is the responsibility of the poet to listen to gossip and pass it on in the way storytellers decant the story of life. There is no freedom without fear and bravery. There is no freedom unless earth and air and water continue and children also continue. It is the responsibility of the poet to be a woman, to keep an eye on this world and cry out like Cassandra, but be licensed to this time. Down in the Bible, some of it's tribal, a tooth for a tooth, an eyeball for an eyeball. Some of it's truth, some of it's gospel, a man with a mission impossible, a man with a tan, a man who liked to... A man with a tan, a man who liked to see, go too fast, look what happens, go too fast, you'll be last. The first one shall be so. Whoops-a-daisy, monkey, monkey, book, or... Thank you very much.
I went to interview John Hegley in the Royal Festival Hall and Vic Lambrisco. Both poets are doing a performance with Simon Mallory in aid of CARE, and CARE is Vic.
The CARE International, they're similar to Oxfam, they give the real basic aid to help people keep going. And, you know, it's a basic grassroots survival sort of stuff, keeping the water flowing, that sort of stuff, while the army's there can keep the oil flowing, which is more important to them. But the benefit is it's on the 9th of June, which is not next Monday but the Monday after, and it's in the pool bar in Curtin Road, and that's in EC2, nearest Tube Liverpool Street. And there's myself, Vic Lambrusco, there's John Hegley, who's a famous poet, and Simon Munnery, who's recently had a TV show, The League Against Tedium. Okay, I'll do one slightly light-hearted one and one more serious one. This first one, now, a lot of people dub protester anarcho types as crusties, and basically, this is a slightly light-hearted look at the crusty political agenda, and this is called Fighting for a Free World. What do we want? Free housing, free food, free heating, free healthcare, free foreign holidays, free guaranteed jackpot lottery tickets, free crash facilities, free love, free thinking, freedom of expression, and free air dye. When do we want it? We want it. 3 o'clock, because that's when we get up to sign on. And the next one is a little bit more serious. Now, President Bush, a year or so ago, said there is an axis of evil afoot in the world. And I think he's probably right. And this is my attempt to have a look at that. This is called Axis of Evil. Which country sells arms to unstable regimes and then declares war on them? Which country bombs the poorest and most wretched of the world and then tries to blame it on God? Which country imprisons 500,000 of its citizens for possession of a plant which grows naturally on the planet? Which country was built on religious intolerance, genocide of Indians and slave labour of Africans? Which country produces a third of the world's pollution and four-fifths of the world's serial killers? Which country throws its full school bully weight behind the murderous Israeli bulldozer? Which country, though lacking its own Middle Ages, still resorts to the medieval barbarism of the death penalty? Which country is so insular only 9% of its citizens have a passport? Which country has insane gun laws masquerading as civil liberty? Which wealthy country creates a poor black underclass, then criminalises it, then disenfranchises it? Which country elects an alleged cokehead with underage drunken daughters on a minority of the popular vote to fight a war on drugs? And which other country genuflects complacently before this beer in the name of a special relationship, an axis of evil afoot? I think they could be right.
China, 1945 to 46, 50 to 53.